It's all about the macro productions.
Lashback Fridays here on Macro Aggressions, taking you back to July 23rd, 2024. Regime Change Incorporated. If you want to turn some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency into actual money, then check out my friend Tony Arterburn with Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. Set up a monthly buy with Wolfpack subscription as low as $50, or roll over your IRA and 401k into physical precious metals. You can even use your Bitcoin to make purchases. Go to macroaggressions.gold, promo code macro for free silver. Now please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macro Aggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. Please rate the show. If you think we've done a good job and deserve 5 stars, we would appreciate it. We are fighting the algorithm battle as best we can. If you want to connect with me, the website is macroaggressions.io. Big thanks to our sponsors. They make this show happen. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years in the United States and Canada, and they're going to get you access to an attorney in your area for a very reasonable price. How about $1 a day? $30 a month will get you in the door. Get you to talk to an attorney. They can knock out all this real low-hanging fruit for you. Stuff like last will and testament, medical directive, financial power of attorney. Boom, boom, boom. Knock them all out. You'll get an app on your phone. Just click a couple buttons. That'll send a message over to a local agent in your area. You'll get a call from them saying, hey, we'll call you the next day and set up a time. You come on in. See you on Friday. This is what we need. We'll knock these documents out. Boom. You just paid this service off for the next, I don't know, 3-4 years. It's $30 a month. It's the best money you'll spend. I'll tell you that right now. But it's not just for these documents. You can do all kinds of things with it. If you have speeding tickets or traffic tickets or red light camera tickets, especially those, send it over to your attorney. They deal with this stuff all the time. They know how to work the system. So you're going to have an attorney. You're going to be able to have somebody review contracts. If your work wants you to sign some weird updated employment agreement that has medical language in it about what you agree to do and not do, and you've got to send that stuff to your attorney. Have them take a look at it first. Don't sign anything until your lawyer takes a look at it. And I'm begging you, please use this power for good, not evil, because you can do all kinds of bad things with it too, I suppose. But I'll tell you what, best thing to do, go to the website that they built specifically for the show, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, and just see what you think. There's so much information there. They have ID Shield. They have a small business plan. They have documentation for people that carry guns, things like that. There's a lot going on over there, as Alex Jones says. it's all happening. It's all happening at don'tgetpushedaround.com. Apparently, you can go over on that website and check it out and see if you find anything that's right for you. And also, big thanks to Chemical Free Body. I mean, hell, they've been with us from the beginning. For the last 4 years, I've been drinking Green 85 every single morning. I swear. And it is the easiest thing you can do. It'll take you 5 minutes in the morning, just mix it up and drink it. And if you want to add something to that, there's the detox bundle. I've done that twice. I lost so much weight, I had to go out and buy new shorts. And I didn't have any weight to lose. And they still found a way to have for the pounds to fall off of me. So look, if you're serious about taking control of your health, the only person that's going to be able to do it is you. Nobody else can make you do it. So chemicalfreebody.com is the place to go. Just do some shopping, see what you think. They make supplements that actually work. How about that? That's a hell of an idea, right? In an industry that's so scammy and filled with garbage, at least Tim James and the crew over there are making products that work. So if you go to chemicalfreebody.com and you find something that you like, the discount code on your way out is macro. Well, we're going to get into the regime change operations. Boy, I'll tell you what, I was doing notes on this before the Trump situation. By the way, Octopus of Global Control is out in audio format, and I've been getting good reviews from people that have listened to it. It's 23 hours. I mean, God, it's well worth your money. You can get it on Audible and Amazon and now on Spotify too. So if you're somebody that has like a premium Spotify subscription where you get to listen to podcasts and things like that, it's in there, or audiobooks, it's in there. They do audiobooks now. So check it out. Anyway, back to the regime change. Boy, I had all these notes on this episode, and then Trump got shot, right? Or did he? I don't know. I'm going to say he got shot. Okay, listen, we'll probably do an episode on it later, and it's too early to know all the details. So I'm just going to be sort of in the middle here. But I mean, I don't think anyone I need you to shoot him. Don't hit him in the head, but just nick his ear from 150. I mean, come on. If that happened, there's a lot going on. Let's just say that there's some fuckery afoot. But what would you expect, right? That's America, baby. And I want to talk about regime change operations, considering Americans are living through one, right? You might as well know what we've been doing to the rest of the world. You know, as they say, the chickens have come home to roost. Well, these CIA chickens have been doing their thing since 1947. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain how we, the American Empire, how we do regime changes, okay? It's not always with a bullet, you know, could be, but it's not always. And there are two different agencies that are sister agencies of the Central Intelligence Agency that are responsible as the forward face of this. That's the National Endowment for Democracy, NED, and USAID, United States Agency for International Development. So both of these groups have very nice names that make it sound like they're just out there spreading democracy like Johnny Appleseed. But the truth is, these are regime change operations. These are groups that are in there to teach the citizens how to vote and where to vote and who to vote for and, you know, all those things. So we'll start with NED. We'll work on, we'll then get to USAID. But this is not going to be a full in-depth breakdown on the CIA, because we could do that. We could do a 10-part series on that. This is just the agencies underneath the CIA, the ones that don't really get talked about too much. But they're the ones that are in charge of playing the political musical chairs game. You know, they're the ones that turn the music off and remove the chairs when you know, in foreign countries. So look, sometimes there are elections in which power changes hands peacefully, and sometimes you get post-election chaos like we have seen recently in France, and we will see in November in America. Guaranteed, regardless of the outcome, we're going to get that. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But first, before we really get into it, I do need to explain the baseline level of the CIA's involvement in this. And so you understand kind of who the parent company is. Let's just call CIA the parent company. And then these subsidiaries underneath it, what they do as the face of the CIA. But the CIA pulled their first real job in 1947. They were the OSS, and they rebranded and realized that in Italy in 47, there were big problems. World War II had just wrapped up, and Italy was sort of politically, I don't know, bisexual or something, right? They kind of go, they'll go either way. They were just fascist, you know, until Mussolini got hanged at the, you know, off a bridge and with his wife. And then they went, maybe fascism isn't the way. They were very interested in communism, which is crazy because communism is retarded. But the Italians were super into communism in the mid 40s after the end of World War II. And the Italians, everyone knew it, right? The high-ranking people inside the Italian government were like, oh, it seems as though this is the new path that we're taking. We're going to maybe elect a communist to be in charge. And I'm sure that information came out of the Vatican with Wild Bill Donovan and his connections there. Probably said, hey, you might want to go check on this group because they're thinking of bringing in a commie, you know, and the CIA was there to fortify the election, right? In air quotes. So they wanted to make sure that their guy got in and that the communist didn't. Part of the reason why they didn't want the communist in there wasn't necessarily just ideologically, but also you can't be a communist and be a member of NATO. And they had just started NATO. They're bringing all these countries in and they want these, you know, they want Western Europe in there, all of them. And they're going, looking at Italy, they go, if you become communist, you're out. So what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that you don't become communist by, you know, rigging your elections and threatening your politicians and setting off car bombs and scaring the shit out of people with our Operation Gladio style terror campaign. So, and of course, this is 47 is the same time. So you've got the CIA and you've got NATO really starting roughly at the same time. And in Gladio's Leave Behind Army was there in Italy primarily, but not limited to that. They were also operating in Belgium and France and really all over Western Europe. But they had their strongest foothold in Italy, and they were doing bombings. And in the end, when Gladio got exposed, it was because of Italy. But NATO has been pulling regime change jobs for the empire in Western Europe for a long time. So this is sort of the where it comes from. The CIA's job early on was to sort of make sure that elections go the way they want them to go so that we can work with those countries. And in the event that an election doesn't go the way we want it to go, then we have to make some decisions about how we want to deal with that person that's in power. Do you want to assassinate them and bring in somebody else? It's tricky. It could go badly. Do you want to just fund that politician's rival? You could do that too. But they like to do a little combo of everything, a little bit of funding, a little bit of terrorism in order to scare the hell out of the population and make them vote a certain way. So we'll talk, you know, that's just sort of the background, right? You know, it, just to see, you know, what the CIA has done. And then, of course, they've never left Europe. I mean, Zelensky is no longer technically the president of Ukraine, but the empire needs him. So he's still alive for now. Not for long. he'll be floating up there in the clouds with Muammar Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein and a bunch of other dead collaborators that sold out their nations to work with the American empire. It always ends badly. It's just a matter of time and degree and whether or not you're going to get a knife shoved up your ass or you're going to get found in some spider hole and hanged on video or whatever. So it's coming. So Zelensky and it's all, I hope the cocaine was worth it, man, because when they hang you at the town square, just know one thing, you deserve it. Okay. But listen, if you're unsure what a regime change operation looks like, you just saw one in Pennsylvania with Donald Trump. You just saw it. That was a regime change op. Okay. So, we almost had an Archduke Franz Ferdinand situation there. That's the Austro-Hungarian emperor who got whacked and they claimed that was of course, history is all lies, of course, but that was in the history books written as the trigger point that started World War I was the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, in part because of the military alliances and treaties that these countries had. And this is part of the reason why when I'm looking at the current situation in Europe, really anywhere, but Europe in particular, and thinking that you know, people are asking, is there going to be World War III? The part about the current situation that makes me very nervous, it reminds me of World War I, not World War II, actually, but World War I. And the thing about World War I was that when this fight broke out, it was between two countries that had mutual defense agreements, pacts with other nations, right? So it's like, if you and me get into a fight, but I've got an agreement with Bob down the street that if I get into a fight with anyone, Bob has got my back. But the guy I'm fighting, he has an agreement with three other people that if he ever gets into a fight, they have to jump into it. So it's like, oh my God, like next thing you know, everybody's fighting, right? It's WrestleMania. So that was World War I. It makes me nervous about the potential for World War III because of the alliances that everyone has in the Middle East and Europe. And, you know, you attack us and we have to attack you. We have, you know, with NATO and Article 5, and you attack one of them, we all jump in. You know, I mean, it's like a Mexican gang, right? You fight one of us, you got to fight us all. So that is the situation that we're currently facing. The CIA was deeply involved in creating this tension. Gladio was, they literally called it a strategy of tension. That was the idea behind it. We've done plenty of episodes on that. If you want to go back through the archives and find the work on Gladio, it's well worth a listen, because it shows, because again, you listen to it or you look at the history books of how this stuff played out and you go, oh, that's amazing. And then it clicks and you go, this strategy can be used over and over again. Yeah, it might have been, you know, 100 years ago, but the methods remain the same. So this is what we want to talk about, how they do it. Okay. The why, we know a lot of the reasons why, but how do they do it? How does the CIA, I mean, everybody knows that the CIA is dangerous, right? You can't, so if you set up a CIA shop and on Main Street, everyone's going to stay away from it, right? Everybody knows these people are maniacs. So you have to rebrand, and you can't tear down the CIA. Everybody knows it. So what they did instead is they created small little groups that were underneath them that had different names. It was like, oh, it's not us, the CIA. It's the National Endowment for Democracy. You know, it says democracy in the name. So that's how they do it. That's part of the way in which they do it. So let's, I'll tell you what, if I had to guess on who was involved in the Trump shooting, and this is, let me be crystal clear, pure speculation on my part, but based on what we saw, and we, you know, lone gunman who's couldn't hit a fucking target if it was right in front of him, is a miraculous shot, right? I don't know, man. I have questions, and I know that things are going to unfold over the months, if not years, and this will be a real rabbit hole to go down to figure it all out. But my money would be on NATO being involved in this. And I know everyone else is saying FBI, or they're saying Secret Service, and it might have come, maybe the Secret Service was given a stand down order, but you have to ask who would be in a position, who would be above the Secret Service to give an order like that they would have to obey. And NATO is not an American group necessarily, although America pays 46% of the bill, it still could come from NATO. And I've had conversations with Ole Damegaard about this too, about the NATO, the false flag / you know, actual terror events that NATO pulls off, and how they're like a traveling road show. And this would fit with a NATO hit. Did they miss? They have two gunmen there, one that was the patsy that was going to get whacked, and one that took the shot, but he missed. I don't know. We'll find out. That's not what this episode is about necessarily. We'll do one of those in the future, but this is about regime changes, and it's just kind of coincidental that we witnessed one. I mean, we witnessed an almost one, and that was crazy. But of course, it's 2024, so get your popcorn, right? Let's talk about the National Endowment for Democracy. Democracy, right? We're just spreading it all over. This is an NGO that is so sketchy that Vladimir Putin threw them out of Russia in 2025, listing them as the very first group on his list of, quote, undesirable NGOs. It's like, oh, the National Endowment for Democracy is here. He's like, get them out. I know who these people are. They're not welcome in Russia. Get them out. So they've been booted out of Russia. They were created in 1983, quote, to advance democracy worldwide, right? So they're out there spreading democracy, don't you know, by pushing certain governmental groups into prominence, you know, in a variety of ways. Like you can, you know, it's like having a super PAC, right? Except the super PAC doesn't just have money to get behind your campaign. You know, it can also blow up your enemy. So they give them money because the CIA has a ton of that. They give them guns. They give them media exposure. They show them how to set traps for their political rivals. They put them through spook school, right? They teach them how to run a campaign, how to eliminate your competition, maybe even actually eliminate your competition. And with the National Endowment for Democracy behind you, it doesn't sound as scary as CIA. You know, if you're running for president of Ecuador, right, and you're backed by the CIA, everybody knows that's America. If you're backed by the National Endowment for Democracy, if they're in your corner, you just go, oh, the people like the casual observers, which is the majority, the vast majority of the people will read that name, National Endowment for Democracy, and assume that this is an American group that is really concerned with making sure that there's free and fair elections in your country, or that the candidate that represents democracy the best is elevated, or whatever story these people tell themselves. None of that is true, right? There's no democracy. There's just not. Whenever you hear groups talking about to advance democracy worldwide, that is regime change. Period. End of story. I mean, that's what it is. They can't say it, right? It would sound awful. So they say we're spreading democracy, wink, wink. You know, so everybody knows what that really means, except for the casual observer, which is the person that would probably get hurt by it the most. So the NED is the CIA, okay? So just so we're clear on this, they're not like sort of associated. They are on the org chart directly underneath the CIA as a sister company, a cutout agency that can do openly right now what the CIA was doing covertly decades ago. Okay. Which is just the evolution of what is acceptable has sort of changed. And some of the things that were real secret that the CIA was doing have kind of come to light. But NED said, yeah, we're doing that. So God only knows what the CIA is doing covertly. They're doing things that people haven't figured out yet, that haven't made it to become like forward, like fine with the general public. The NED is just a softer, like forward facing version operating outside of the shadows, right? They're not trying to hide. They want you to, they'll set up an office on Main Street that says NED. They don't care because they don't have that stigma. Not enough people know who they are to really put up much of a fight. So they see that and they get a pass. But we know who they are. And one of the things that the CIA was doing, you asked probably, well, what were they doing decades ago covertly that the NED is doing publicly right now? Like, it can't be that bad, right? Well, I mean, we're not talking about murders, but we are talking about seeking to influence, corrupt, compromise, control political groups, business groups, and trade unions. And that's what the NED does. They focus on those. They want to control. If you can control the trade unions, you can get a lot of people to vote a certain way. If you can control political groups, obviously, business groups as well. So if you can get your hands on all those levers of power and make them all go towards your candidate will win, Okay. And the NED was funded by, is currently funded by Congress in part, but their actions would be illegal in the United States. So just understand that. What they are doing in foreign countries, the election interference, the fortifying elections that they're doing in foreign countries, if they did that in America to American political groups, trade unions, and business groups, they would take those people away in handcuffs, theoretically, because it would be illegal. But as Henry Kissinger says, the illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a bit longer. So the NED acts as a private grant maker for groups that don't really want anyone to know that they're working with the CIA's soft power arm. Okay. They've got money. They've got a lot of money. Money makes a lot of things happen, right? So they've got this, and they basically spend money. They grant money to groups like the Poynter Institute, which is propaganda, to Bellingcat, which is propaganda, to the Atlantic Council, which is the NGO of NATO, which is war and propaganda. So this is where the NED spends some money. They work with these groups, but they're basically broken down into four core channels within the NED. If you're looking at this as an org chart, it goes CIA and then NED, and then below them, you break that out into four different blocks: National Democratic Institute, International Republican Institute, Solidarity Center, and the Center for International Private Enterprise. Okay. So these four groups. And these groups are an extension of the State Department. Okay, so they're under, like I said, they're underneath State Department, CIA, NED, and then these four groups. We'll start with the most important one, which is the National Democratic Institute. Now, there's a Republican version of this too, and it's awful, as you might expect. But let's talk about this National Democratic Institute, because, you know, I'm not on the red team or the blue team, but this version, this is the blue side of NED. When I'll list off a couple of the names of people in it, and you'll know what I'm talking about. It's a real dangerous group. Extremely like, oh, National Democratic Institute, what are you guys doing? You guys talking about elections and everything? We're talking about elections in foreign countries, and if they don't get on board with us, we murder them, right? So, or we set it up so that they blow themselves up, right? Wink, wink. So it's based in Washington, D.C. It is located, they are, the National Democratic Institute isn't just America. It's 156 different countries you can find this group operating. It's financed by, obviously, the parent, which is a National Endowment for Democracy, but also the Hewlett Foundation. The Hewlett Foundation is a world government depopulation foundation that is every bit as dangerous as the Rockefeller Foundation or the Tides Foundation or Open Society, Soros. So there's 16,000 civic organizations that they control, 10,000 legislators that they control. And when I say control, I mean they bought them. Those are politicians that they bought. And 1,300 women's organizations, right? So, not to mention 200 election observer delegations in 67 countries. Because, listen, when you're talking about fortifying elections, you have to send election observers there to make sure that they're observing that everybody votes for the correct candidate. Right. So I told you I'd mention some of the people that have been members of this group. Susan Rice, who may or may not be the current president of the United States, who's actually running things. Madeleine Albright of the 500,000 dead Iraqi kids is worth it. Donna Brazile, who is probably going to get murdered by Hillary Clinton at some point, and Mario Cuomo, who was nice enough to create two of the dumbest kids in the world, the Cuomo brothers, who single-handedly destroyed New York. So these are the groups that are, or these are some of the individuals that are involved in this group. They have something called Project Democracy, which is focused on Central and South America, seeking to promote free, fair, transparent elections. But, you know, really what they do in these cases of Central and South America is they go out there, there's an election that's going to happen. And they don't necessarily, they know that somebody is coming into power, right? And they're not opposed to somebody being in charge. They would like for them to have control over who that person is. So one of the things that they really want in this is that they don't care. They would prefer, let me put it this way, they would prefer if elite, wealthy families would win the elections, you know, powerful elites in those countries. Because if there's a powerful elite family that comes out of Colombia, let's say, and they ascend to the political throne, and in the United States, NED has to work with them. They can work with a group that's coming out of, you know, that's powerful already, wealthy families, wealthy industrialists. That's their type. That's their bread and butter. They can work with those people all day long. Where they get very nervous is when somebody who's a political upstart or somebody that has the power, has the love of the actual people and is talking about something like, we're going to give the power back to the people, that person, they're going to blow them up, right? That can never happen, right? So they're very focused on that. They're willing to work with the elites within the country, but you know, they don't want to work with some upstart that's actually popular and is talking about things like, you know, giving land back to the peasants and giving them their rights back. And all, you start talking about that stuff and you will find that your airplane blows up pretty quick. So this is, and of course the NED wouldn't be blowing up the airport, but they're sending all their reports up to their bosses at the CIA, and the CIA takes a look at that. And then they send the jackals out, as John Perkins has documented in his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, to his friends that refused to play ball. They both blew up. So that's how it works. And the NED is part of that. So in the future, when you hear this term, National Endowment for Democracy, do not, I don't think this audience will, but just don't reflexively go, oh, I assume it's about democracy. In fact, at this point, whenever you hear a government agency out of America that has democracy in its name, just understand right off the bat that there's no democracy happening there. Let's move on. Let's move on to USAID. It says USAID. There's aid, right? I got news for you. There's no aid from USAID. There might be AIDS, perhaps. You have a better chance getting AIDS from them, but you're not getting any actual aid. This group is a branch of the State Department with a goal of providing international development. Nice and vague. Just the way they like it, right? What do you do with the international development? Well, you know, it encompasses quite a large variety of things that we do. So when you describe it as providing international development, I mean, that is whatever they want it to be. And it was once described by a former director at USAID, not some dipshit who's just looking, but the guy who used to be in charge of it all, who he said it was, quote, infiltrated from top to bottom with CIA people. Yeah, no shit. That's because USAID is the sister company cut out of the CIA. The reason why it's filled with CIA people is because it is CIA. It's not sort of the CIA. It is. It just has a different name on it. You know, you get a different business card, or maybe you don't go to Langley, you go to some other, you go to a different office in Washington, D.C., but you're not in Langley. So I don't know. They fall under the State Department. They have 4,000 people officially working for them, but it's kind of hard to tell because when you start to talk, I mean, who's getting a paycheck from them that says USAID? 4,000 people. Who's getting money from them? That's a different story. Right, so there's a lot of people getting money from USAID that are not filling out W-2s to let people know. I just, you know, in case you were wondering, they are majorly focused on two things, and this is a real important globalist group, because the two things that USAID is working on is regime change and depopulation. And look, for what it's worth, they're pretty good at it.
Okay.
They're not, this isn't their first rodeo. They know exactly what they are doing. And I'll give you a little bit of the background on what USAID is, why they exist. When I say that they are in the regime change and depopulation business, this isn't speculation. It's they were started by the Office of Population was started underneath USAID in order to deal with the population situation, right? So it's not me saying, oh, I think that they might be hell-bent on depopulation. It's part of what they do. So in 1966, Congress passed the Foreign Assistance Act, which allocated funds for population control programs internationally. Okay. So Congress said, let's put money aside so that we can depopulate the third world. Kissinger's reasoning for that in his 74 memo was that they wanted to, you know, if your population expands, then you have a tough time managing and maintaining the current government system. And they like the current government system because they know how to work it. So what they want is they don't want there to be, you know, 4 billion people in India because they can't control that. They would really much rather it be like a smaller number so that the politics stays intact and that they can work and manipulate that the politicians that way. So they're interested in, as I said, they started the Office of Population, which is established underneath USAID. And their first director was a guy named Dr. Reimert Thorlof Ravenholt. Holy shit, that's the scariest name I've ever heard. Dr. Reimert Thorlof Ravenholt. If I were screaming that with a German accent, that would sound even worse. It's like Reinhard Wolfcastle from The Simpsons. You know, this is what it sounded like. Anyway, this guy was the first director of USAID. He was out of his mind. He said he wasn't, I'm assuming he wasn't drunk when he said this because he said it to a reporter, but he said he wanted to sterilize 25% of the women in the world. You know, God damn, man. Like, maybe don't let the cat out of the bag. We are talking about, I mean, sterilization means that these women will never be able to have children. And like, who the fuck do you think you are, man? You think you're in charge of this planet? Dr. Reimert Thorlof Ravenholt? The third, I'm assuming. I don't know. But he was in charge of distributing millions and millions of dollars into the third world. And the way he did it was he gave it to the International Planned Parenthood Foundation. Uh-oh, Margaret Sanger would be thrilled to know about this. I think she was probably dead at the time. I don't know. He gave it to two groups. He gave it to International Planned Parenthood Federation, which was the international version of Planned Parenthood, started by Margaret Sanger, and he gave it to the Population Council. And the money that he gave was to sterilize the people so that they don't reproduce. So I ask you, we can go back and to the Kissinger National Security Study Memorandum 200 that came out on December 10th, 1974, written by Henry Kissinger, in which the United States policy towards the third world is that of depopulation. He went on to name 13 countries. He identified them. And then he said that what you need to do is you need to send in NGOs like USAID. You need to send them in and let them do the dirty work. Let them do the sterilization, the preventative, the birth controls and all that on the up and up, like, hey, we're here to, you know, and then do the sterilization program, both overtly and covertly, however you need to do it. And then he said in this memo, the nice thing about having the NGOs is that you basically have a cutout that can take the fall for you if you need to. So for the politicians, like say the president of the countries or the, I don't know, whatever, emperors of the country, whoever gets on board with Kissinger's idea, one of the ways in which he sold it to him is, no, don't worry. If they ever find out that you're involved in it, they're not going to blame you and they're not going to blame us. They'll blame the NGO, which is USAID. Nowadays, it's not just USAID. It's Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Of course, what happened in India? They blame the NGO, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, for giving 496,000 children non-polio polio with the polio vaccines. The Gates Foundation, and the thousands of other children that died from it. They kicked them out. Because as soon as the country figured out, like, and the people figured out, like, oh my God, they're sterilizing and killing all of us, they rise up and they want to be mad at somebody. The government said, it's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which it was. I mean, they weren't making that up. But again, India knew that they were there. India knows what they're doing. They're there because India allows them to do that. But once the people find out and they make a big stink about it, then India's government says, oh no, how could we have ever not noticed that the Bill and Melinda Gates was in here, foundation was in here sterilizing all our people and killing all these kids? Like, oh, we are appalled. We're going to throw them out of here immediately. Good job, Bill. That was great. You did a great job. We'll bring you back in soon. We'll bring you back in when we can. And they have. And they're back. They're back. They're back in India in a different capacity, but they're back. So this is exactly what Kissinger was talking about. A group, a non-governmental organization. So it's plausible deniability. It's not us doing it. It's this rogue group over here, USAID. Well, you guys finance them, don't you? Well, yeah, but we thought they were just going to give out condoms and IUDs. But no, it seems like they're out here accidentally sterilizing everybody. So that came from the first director, Dr. Ravenholt, who said, just flood the zone with money. Give as much money as you can to these groups and then let them get in there and do that International Planned Parenthood Foundation, Population Counts. If these guys get busted, who cares? We just move them around. So this guy also, as if that wasn't bad enough, he also sent millions of dollars of very poor quality contraceptive drugs, even drugs that were banned, even drugs that were unproven or straight up defective devices, like defective IUDs, which killed thousands of women and injured tens of thousands. He sent all of these dangerous drugs and dangerous products out of the United States and into the third world. And, you know, you get a lot of leeway when you're trying, you know, when you send your products out into the third world and it kills or injures a bunch of people. You know, it's kind of hard to be mad about that when you're USAID, because after all, you're trying to kill people. So if you're, these poor quality contraceptive drugs killed a bunch of people, that's terrible. It's like, well, I mean, we're going to get them one way or the other, right? So these people, these groups, USAID has been busted for murdering people. Murder. This is murder, what they're doing. State-sanctioned depopulation murder funded by the government. American government. So, see, the thing is that sometimes these countries had no idea that they were even accepting aid from the CIA when they took money from USAID because they didn't understand the game. They didn't know what was what. And because of that, well, here's the thing. If you start doing business with USAID, all of those reports, or NED for that matter, all those reports that they generate on the activities that they're watching you and what you're up to, you're now on the CIA's radar because they send all that upstairs. They send that all that stuff to Langley. And those guys go, yeah, we're going to have to keep an eye on this country. They're getting on the wrong side of things. Or they accepted aid from USAID. Let's watch and see how this plays out. So the intelligence gathering is shared with the CIA as a matter of standard operating procedure. It's like giving the corporate, you know, like maybe you're like a franchise or something, like you work at a corporate, you know, you fill out all these paperworks and send them to your boss, but then your boss sends them to corporate. Well, corporate is the CIA in this equation, right? And so when you do that, you are, of course, putting your country on the radar, right? Big time. Now, I mentioned depopulation as one half of what USAID does, but the main focus of this show is regime change, and that is also what they do. So, look, the CIA can't even show its face in some parts of the world due to its well-earned reputation of being monstrous, right? So they send USAID in to do its dirty work in public, right? Disguised as help, right? They're always here to help. They're giving you aid, right? When they're not giving you AIDS. So they've got a bad reputation for, at least the CIA has a bad reputation. One of the things that the CIA was doing that was giving it a bad reputation was they were getting involved in something called political anthropology. Have you ever heard of that? It was a big thing in the 1960s. And groups such as Anthropologists for Radical Political Action sprung up. And these groups were actually furious that the CIA was involved in anthropology. And they knew right away that they were using USAID to manipulate political and social issues. And they didn't really appreciate it too much. So this had been going on for a while. And the idea that like the CIA, I mean, this is some Raiders of the Lost Ark shit, right? When you've got the CIA getting involved in anthropology in order to sort of, I don't know, prove up that their guy is the right guy. I mean, we're measuring skulls at this point. You know what I'm saying? This is getting into some weird territory, but that's the CIA's bread and butter. And of course they use USAID to get involved in it. So that it doesn't look like their fingerprints are on it. But during the Iraq War, this gives you an idea of sort of what USAID does. During the Iraq War of the mid-2000s, USAID spent $80 million in Iraq on voter education and training using the same two groups that the NED uses. USAID is now using the same groups that the NED uses. National Democratic Institute. We talked about that. That's the one with Madeleine Albright and Susan Rice and all these people. And the International Republican Institute, which is like the red team version of the National Democratic Institute. And so what they were doing with this $80 million that they were spending was that they were, quote, educating and training the citizens of Iraq to vote, teaching them how to vote, what voting is, where you go to vote, who you vote for. Oh, wait, we're not supposed to tell you who to vote for, right? But that's the guy you need to vote for. That's the guy. I'm sure they could go into Afghanistan. Oh, it's crazy. Everybody voted for Hamid Karzai. I wonder why they did that. You know why they did that? Because USAID was in there making sure that everybody got educated on how to vote. An illiterate country filled with sheep herders in sandals all magically voted for Hamid Karzai, who worked for an oil company. That's how it goes down, right? So sometimes you can have, theoretically, democracy, right? You can have an election system and you can just convince the people to vote a certain way. That's the easiest way. Just convince the people. You can give them money, you can run ads, you can say that the opposition is bad for the country, and you can suppress them from a media standpoint and elevate your guy from me. You can do all these things without firing a shot if you need to. And hopefully that's the way it goes. This isn't great, but USAID has done this for a long, long time. They know how to politically influence people into voting a particular way. But if the votes aren't there, then they can go to Plan B. And Plan B is not good. So, so USAID, among some of the other things that they're known for, they are really well known for turning a blind eye to the war crimes that are being committed by their guy in that particular country, right? The guy that they want you to vote for can go out and behead a bunch of people, and USAID just looks the other way, right? Because that's their guy. That's our guy. That's the empire's guy. We want him in there. Mistakes were made. Those guys, maybe their heads weren't on securely to begin with. I don't know. I mean, maybe they just fell off. Who's to say? Mistakes were made, right? So that's USAID doing that, and they can hit you. They don't have a problem. They're no angels, right? So if you approach them and say, "We can't believe the candidate you're backing is actually a bloodthirsty tyrant," and they're like, "Yeah, we know. Like, why do you think we're supporting him?" Of course, but so there's no. There's no like humanitarian component to this. This is straight up political savagery. And in the best case, best case scenario, is that USAID turns a blind eye to what's going on. Usually, it's a much worse case scenario. In many cases, USAID is financing the guy that is committing atrocities. Whoever their partner is, if whoever they've decided to work with, that person is getting money from the State Department. State Department, CIA, CIA to USAID, USAID to National Democratic Institute or International Republican Institute or whatever. Now you've got like four steps in this chain, but it's coming from the State Department, no matter what. Right. So this is the direction that we're going, where they will finance the activities that they're pretending not to see. It's pretty disgusting, but USAID and human rights abuse go hand in hand. They've been connected to one another for a very long time. Now, in the 70s, during Vietnam, if you take a look at what was going on back then, we know about the role of the Golden Triangle, and we know about not just the war, but the drugs that were kind of coming out of that area. We have Ted Shackley involved in that, in running the CIA's Southeast Asia operation back then. And one of the things that Shackley did with the CIA was he brought in USAID to help with the assistance of running drugs. So they have been, they're spreading democracy when they're not out there spreading black tar heroin everywhere. So they're deeply involved in all of this. I think it's important for people to kind of, just to understand that we, the American Empire, have been running regime change operations in around the globe, in particular in the Third World, for a long time. And you can say what you want, but they're pretty good at it. Not perfect, but they get a lot of their people into office when they want them in office. And that is a testament to having endless dollars that the State Department can print up. Some of this stuff probably runs off of the black budget. Some of this stuff also, you have to keep in mind that if you're the CIA and you are, running heroin out of Afghanistan, then it's very important that the administration that is perceived to be running Afghanistan is friendly to you. The minute they stop being friendly to you, you've got a problem because you're running a covert drug operation, and now they've just installed a president that is going to stop your grift. And when you're the CIA, that can't happen. So whether it's the Golden Triangle of Southeast Asia, whether it's Afghanistan or the next iteration of that in the future, you will understand that it is imperative that they have stability from a governmental level, because they're going to need that in order to invest the sort of time and energy it takes to start a drug trafficking operation in a particular country like this. And so when you've got billions of dollars at stake from this drug running operation, you're certainly not going to let some asshole get elected that's going to shut this all down. You're just going to make sure that that doesn't happen. So you send in the soft power arms, right? NED, USAID, to kind of finesse the situation. But if those reports go back to the CIA that this guy isn't playing ball, we've financed all his competitors and they can't stand, he's going to win again. Well, then the CIA takes the guy on a helicopter ride. You know what I mean? So this is the direction it goes. We have plenty of examples of this happening. And it's been allowed to happen in part because people think that people get fooled by the names. They don't know. Again, it's like the Patriot Act. Oh, it's the Patriot Act. It's patriotic. I hand over my heart and everything. It's like, oh, USAID. They're giving aid. No, if you're the bad guys are giving you aid, I guess, technically, but they're not giving aid to the people. Like in my mind, it's like they're showing up with humanitarian support after a big disaster or something. No, that is, it's just not happening. Except to the extent that they can manipulate some disaster and use that to their own benefit, maybe they'd be in there. But it is also, on top of everything else, it is an intelligence gathering operation. And when you are located, like the, where was this group? The National Democratic Institute, and you're located in 156 countries. Well, then that's a pretty powerful intelligence gathering apparatus because you're already there. And you've got your guys on the ground that can, you know, can figure out what's real and what's fake and feed that information back to the mothership in Langley. And then they can make decisions about what they want to do. Is this a situation where we can talk to the candidate and maybe put a money in a Cayman Island bank account and get him to drop out of the race or do something crazy to make sure that he, you know, loses and says something cartoonish at the very end and loses support? Or, you know, maybe this is a do-gooder guy who's running to restore sanity in his third world shithole country that's been destroyed over the years by America. And he's popular because everybody likes him. The CIA looks at him and goes, that ain't going to happen. So maybe we send USAID in to work on him. And if all else fails, well, then we deal with them the way that we deal with other people. But, you know, just considering that we're living through a slow motion regime change operation ourselves, we're getting to experience the gift that we've given many, many other countries over the years. And it's terrible that we do it. And we do it because we have the power of the petrodollar that gives us basically a printing press. And we are coming to an end of that. And hopefully, in an end to the petrodollar situation and an end to the dollar as the world's reserve currency, maybe it'll be the end of the printing press. And we no longer have the printing press. Maybe some of these endeavors that you've got, like NED and USAID, maybe they go away. Maybe not. Probably not. Wishful thinking. When USAID isn't just to give you an idea of like, well, are they operating like in America? Well, when they aren't depopulating the third world, it's only because they are busy depopulating the first world. I would like to let you know that USAID gave $64 million to Peter Daszak's Eco Health Alliance in 2021. You know, the guy that started the whole COVID situation. I'd love to say there's nothing to see here, but I think you know differently. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. If you rate the show, if you think we've done a good job, we would appreciate a 5-star review. And if you like this episode, you can share it with your friends and family. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.